Welcome to Australia's Fiercely Independent Property Podcast.
Residential property is the only asset class we live in. It is where we raise our families, and it's our most expensive investment, yet property advice remains unregulated.
Listen to three pioneers of the property industry, each with diverse areas of expertise in property planning, buying, and education.
We'll distill the raw truth from the ill-informed.
Join the property planner, David Johnston, the property buyer, Kate Bakos.
That's me.
And the property professor, Peter Kalizos, as we take you on a journey through the maze of property, mortgage and money decisions to empower you to create your ideal lifestyle.
Well, hello everyone. It's with pleasure that I'm hosting today's session with my two fabulous co-hosts, Pete and Dave. And it's been a little while for us since getting together. The band's not been on the road together for a little while because we put a few recordings together before holidays. So if you can hear us catching up in our chit chat, we genuinely are, and it's been a lovely holiday break for all three of us catching up with dear friends and family. Dave, how was your trip to New Zealand?
Yeah, Kate, it was really good to catch up with Sarah's parents for the first time in over 3 years. I think it filled a bit of a hole, particularly for Sarah and just for the whole family that it's sort of been building over the COVID period. We really enjoyed ourselves. It was great seeing the kids with cousins and aunties and uncles, and we were pretty tired after catching up with everyone and ready to get on the flight home in the end after about 10 days. We really enjoyed it, but you know, the airlines still are getting their act together, that's for sure. We had a few trials and tribulations with missed flights and one piece of luggage still hasn't been seen, a few things like that, but it was a great trip.
Well, that's really good. I think it's incredible when you think about cousins that you haven't seen each other for 3 years, and then you think about the age of these kids. For a lot of them, they're reconnecting and re-meeting their cousins, but what's always awesome is how they just slot back into cousin land as soon as they, you know, they feel that cousin vibe. And yeah, I think these holidays would have been special for a lot of Australians crossing the ditch. I'm glad you had a good time. Pete, how was your family fiesta?
Yeah, so we've been building up holiday and flight credits, as many other people have, during COVID. So we spent some time in Canberra with daughter number two. And then 2 weeks later, we all went up to Noosa for a family holiday. That was our third attempt to get up there. They had been cancelled due to COVID over the last 18 months. It was terrific for everyone to get together again.
Yes, yeah, so cool. I did feel guilty for not catching up with you, but my dear mate in Adelaide just had back-to-back awesome events at all kinds of bars and music places, and we had such a good time, and I was just marvelling with you about how much your city's changed with all of your bars and nightlife popping up.
It certainly has. The last 5 years we've got some terrific laneways, pop-up bars. We're really literally growing up. All right, we still might be a big country town, but when I say growing up, that also means in the physical form. So we have a lot more taller buildings, that combination of office buildings and residential buildings, but also more entertainment options in Adelaide and around Adelaide, like in particular the Adelaide Hills, McLaren Vale, the beachside suburbs. Yeah, so, I mean, I think Adelaide's the best place to live, but I'm sure everyone else has their own.
Hey, I had a great time. No sponsorship deal here from the South Australian government.
No, that's right, but it was the tourism SA, yeah.
Now, you two, have you got your thinking caps on for your market update, or is it a pretty easy one? Before we get into today's episode, take a listen to our weekly market update.
Oh, for Dave, I reckon it's going to be very easy. We had some very interesting news yesterday.
Yeah, obviously interest rates went up by 0.25% yesterday, and the governor's changed his tune from, you know, I think a lot of people, when he said rates wouldn't go up until 2024, we thought, are you really predicting 3 years ahead of time? That's a very risky thing to do. So, yeah, I think that's on the right path to manage inflation. Yeah, I think I've touched on a couple of times how I don't think the inflation genie is that easy to stick back into the bottle, and I thought it would last longer than many people sort of had expected. So I think we can talk about this a bit more in our market update, which will be next week. Yeah, look, a lot of people were thinking 15 basis points. They'd take it from 0.1 to 0.25, but he lifted by 25 and, you know, inflation was up at 5.1%, which exceeded all expectations and is as high as it has been for around a couple decades. So, yeah, we're living through interesting times that many people haven't lived through if they're sort of in their 40s or younger.
Yeah, that's right. I'm always okay to say when I got it wrong. Wasn't happy to get it wrong, but I really thought that they'd hold this month and apply the increase next month in light of a few things and some hints that we had about looking out for some other employment figures, and in particular being mindful of sidestepping the election. But I was wrong. The announcement came through, and interesting times. And you're absolutely right, Dave. For anyone who's assumed that declining or static rates at, you know, 2% borrowing is normal, it's not normal. And I think we all have to readjust our expectation of normal. I don't think it helps hearing some of the headlines suggesting super heightened increases, because I don't subscribe to that being a reality. But I look forward to chatting about it next week for sure. Pete, let's hear your market update.
Well, so just following on from Dave's, because there was a lot of talk when interest rates go up, property prices are going to go down. And typically they do, but there was a lot of scaremongering. So what I did was, a while ago we did booms and busts, and I based on calendar years, I just did something a bit different because I was on so many flights over the holidays. I had my laptop out and did some analysis over financial years. And I suppose the theme is you've got to take the good with the bad. So in Sydney, for example, since 1986, some of the best years we've had in financial year 87-88, Sydney did 30%. Then the following financial year, it did 38%. But the worst it did was financial year 2013, where it dropped by 10%. Melbourne, very similar, same year, it dropped by 10%, but it's also had double-digit boom years. So I don't think you need to be a genius to work out that property prices will not only slow, because they're already slowing, but will drop. The little darling of Australian real estate, Hobart, has joined Sydney and Melbourne with price drops. But we can't have accelerating property prices forever, because that is just unsustainable. Yes, ideally, we want it all to go beautifully and steady in a lovely straight line, but it just doesn't do that. So investing in property is a long-term plan, and if you're prepared to take the good with the bad, that is really low interest rates, which we've had for the last 2 years, historically low, and even when you look at, you know, the 10-year, 20-year average, we're still well below the average. So you've got to take the good with the bad. So take a deep breath and relax.
I love it, Pete. I can't wait for next week. Now, I've got a market update that's not related to news feeds or timing or anything like that. It's actually, it's an interesting market update, because I chatted about an auction where I bid in $1 bids and we had a bit of fun with that. But the long and short of it was that the bidder I was battling with didn't understand the auction rules and the power that an auctioneer can have. And strangely enough, I've been doing this for over 12 years, but I had another similar style auction experience on Saturday in Geelong. And again, it was a bidder who didn't understand the auction rules. And what happened was they left their bid to the very, very end. And I could tell that the auctioneer knew that there was more interest in the crowd, because he kept wandering over to the other side of the crowd and saying, "It's very quiet over here. Are you sure you're not in?" And I could see that they were a little bit pensive, but they weren't doing anything. Anyway, I battled it out with a couple of different buyers, and the auctioneer would have done multiple auction calls, going once, going twice, third, final call. "You sure you're not out? It's an extra coffee a week," blah, blah, blah. Like, he did all of that, and it was a very long auction, and I had my heart beating in my throat many a time. Anyway, when it looked like it was really going to be our clients, he knocked it down, and just as the contract hit his hand, someone in the crowd said another five. It was really hard, really hard for the auctioneer. You've got the vendors watching on. You could hear the gasp in the crowd, and he had to be reminded that his bid was too late. But
yeah, that's right, because once the hammer comes down, that's it, all over Red Rover.
Yeah, and what do you do as an auctioneer? You've got a vendor inside. You've got a buyer yelling at you saying, "No, no, no, I said it before it hit." You've got to make sure your bid is heard. Once it hits their hand, the deal is done. And so, you know, I had to have a bit of a bark at him as well because I didn't want any bidding reopened, but it wasn't going that way. And, you know, the vendors are inside saying, well, you know, he did leave it to the very last minute, and is that a reflection of how, you know, he'd potentially carry things through as a buyer through the pre-settlement period? Could he be a difficult character? You never know. But it was just one of those experiences. I thought, how can I experience something so crazy in 1 month twice over? But I thought I'd share it with our listeners.
So what did the bidder say when it was already knocked down? And he said, oh, no, hang on, I got my bid in just before you knocked it down. And
I wasn't happy about it. But the auctioneer standing there saying, I didn't receive your bid. I gave you ample opportunity. Opportunity. Not once, multiple times.
Yeah.
Really long
auction. No, good on the auctioneer.
Yeah. And I said the same thing. I just said, too late, mate. You need to understand the auction rules. But
correct.
It made everyone very anxious. And you always think about the vendor. How does the vendor feel? Could have there been more there? But no, it was an antic that just didn't go well, and it left a pretty sour taste in everyone's mouth, I think.
Yeah.
Well, anyway.
At least you came through with the goods for your client.
A few heart stoppers. It's been crazy. We love hearing from our listeners, and we'd love to tackle more of your questions. So please, if you have any on your mind, no matter how great or small, send us a message. You can email us info@propertyplannerbuyerandprofessor, or go to our website, Facebook page, or simply click on the link in your podcast app under the play button and fill out our online form. Now, today we have a really fun podcast, and Pete's put together our notes, and I'm proudly hosting today. And Dave, you've got some really exciting points that will tie in as well, because you've put your property planner hat on here, and I think they're wonderful points. We're running through the top tips for first-time investors and first home buyers. And really, I think anyone that's maybe doing it subsequently, or they've not bought property in a little while, can refresh themselves with this as well. Now, Pete, number one, I'm going to start with you. Educate yourself. And clearly this is one way of
many. So says the lecturer, that's right.
Yeah.
So what does educate yourself mean? Well, there's plenty of webinars that you can join in on, podcasts, like you're educating yourself right now listening to this podcast, and there are many other good podcasts, not just on property, but money management and business seminars. So I don't know how popular seminars are going to be again, because people have got used to staying at home and doing stuff over Zoom and Microsoft Teams. But I particularly like seminars because there's a lot of informal gathering afterwards. Plenty of articles on property, but you want to check out who's writing it and check out their credibility. This is one of the sessions that I actually do in class. I get my students to listen to other podcasts and ours as well, and do background checks on people. You know, this person here, are they just spruiking? Is it just a marketing tool for them, or are they really trying to educate people? Look at the source of the article. Look at the source of the books. Plenty of good books out there on property and property investment and property development. And if you're willing to spend a bit of extra time and money, there's courses, from simple courses to I think in Victoria you call them adult community education, ACE courses. In South Australia we have them as WEA courses. So they might only go for a few hours, might be a morning or an afternoon, and they're on different topics. Or you might go to your local TAFE, or as I've already mentioned on a previous podcast, I have a course as part of the Master of Property, which is a non-award course, Introduction to Property and Valuation. So basically you can do something very simple and just sit at home in front of your computer and do webinars and listen to podcasts, right through to putting some extra time and effort in and doing some courses, whether they be online or in person.
Yeah, fantastic tips. So I've got a couple of little extras that spring to mind. Mm-hmm. You get a few community Facebook groups, and look, sometimes the tips aren't all that fantastic, but when you've got a really large collective and people are comfortable to comment on each other's posts, you can glean a lot from that. And I also think if you've got an alignment or a good relationship with a firm that do put out some good information, and Dave, you're a case in point. You know, if people subscribe to your newsletter, you might not have time or the information that week might not excite you, but if you had this in your newsfeed and something catches your eye and you're putting the time into reading something that's been constructed specifically for a segment of the market, it can be a really great free education. Yep. Have you got a few others you could think of, Dave?
You guys have covered it really well there. The only other one which fits into one of the top 10 tips, which we'll come to, is I think you get a lot of education from the best advisors. You know, that's the other place to get educated, because ultimately education allows you to become informed so you're able to make decisions that are right for you.
Yeah, fabulous. Number two is one that we can't underestimate, and it's mixing with like-minded people. I prefer to think of it as avoiding property discussion with non-like-minded people. Sometimes it's the negative people or the jealous ones or those that are threatened by what you're doing. They can unravel your strategy or plant seeds of doubt. Often if you just have someone who's your friend who's not necessarily interested in property, they might ask you some decent questions that really get you thinking, and they can stand back and ask you those questions looking from the outside in without any kind of educated viewpoint on it. So sometimes you can have the best answers extracted from you by someone who doesn't really know much about property, because they stand right back and ask you the why. But Pete, can you chat to us about why you think mixing with like-minded people is so critical?
You can exchange ideas and you get confirmation that what you're thinking and what you're doing is correct. And it's good to get a range of ideas, because there is more than one way to make money in property investment. And it's good to discuss those ideas, whether it's face-to-face, you know, it might be at, like, again, pre-COVID, we used to have lots of property meetings. I've presented at many property meetings over the ages. You mentioned one before, Facebook groups, the ability to exchange ideas over Facebook, and online chat groups. So there's plenty of opportunity. Just do a search, see what's around. For me, as I'm a bloke that can talk faster than I can type, I'm not really good at replying to people who send me stuff through Facebook. But either way, there are plenty of opportunities for you to mix with like-minded people, whether you are face-to-face or whether you are online.
Absolutely. Dave, what do you think about the idea of mixing with like-minded people, or the danger in mixing with people that are being negative about what you've got in mind?
Your mindset in life drives most of your outcomes in life. And so this is the subset of that, really, when it comes to property. So being around like-minded people means you're spending time with people who have a similar mindset to you. And so therefore, you know, you're more likely to make decisions that are aligned with your mindset. And ultimately, you don't want to be around people who are going to drag you down, who are going to perhaps make you unable to make decisions within property. We know that with investing, inaction can be can be worse than taking, you know, action that's half good, if you like.
I totally agree. And I experience this with clients sometimes. I might have someone who's been chatting to me on and off for a little while. They've decided to press the go button. We've scheduled a strategy meeting. We've talked through their cash flows, their motivations, their long-term goals. We've understood their constraints, and we've modelled out a strategy. And sometimes that might happen late in the week. And I know that they've shared what they're doing with the wrong people. When I get a call or an email on a Monday morning saying, can we have a chat? What do you think about the impact of, you know, rising interest rates? Or how do you think the Australian property market is looking? Or do you think Melbourne's really a good idea? Or the worst one, Kate, what do you think about cryptocurrency? And so it means that they've been talking to someone that isn't aligned with what they're trying to do or doesn't have the full information, and that can be dangerous too. So I think being careful about how much you're asking someone to have input on is really, really critical, because if you've paved out a strategy based on constraints that they don't know about, it's very easy for them to sit in the armchair and tell you what they would have done if they had a similar situation. So yeah, alignment with people is really important. And sometimes it's better not to chat about property if you're not convinced that person will be supportive of what you're trying to do. Now, setting your goals is number three. Dave, I'm going to ask you to comment on this one.
With setting your goals, I'll just throw out a few tips. So tip one, you know, we've had a whole episode on this, but you need to visualize your goals. We know visualization makes a big difference to achieving what you want to achieve in life. So you need to visualize them. Tip two, ruthlessly eliminate your goals. In other words, keep it simple. You know, only have 1 to 3 goals. Don't make it too complicated. Tip three, set the goals for now. So in the short to middle term, if they get too far away, it can seem harder to achieve. That doesn't mean you don't have long-term goals, but make sure you've worked back to what you need to do in the short to mid-term to achieve your long-term goal. Make them specific, measurable, achievable, relevant, and time-bound. So that's tip four, which is the acronym SMART. So create SMART goals, tip four. Tip five, write them down. Helps you be accountable. Too often people have goals, but then they don't share them with anyone. They don't write them down. If you want to achieve things in life, tell other people you're going to do something, okay? You're much more likely to go out and do it because, you know.
You're on the hook.
You're on the hook.
That's right.
So, you know.
I need you to talk to my daughter, Dave. We get a lot of, yeah, 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 I'm going to do that. And it sometimes doesn't happen.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, you can talk to my kids and I'll talk to your daughter. That sounds good. So tip six, share your goals. Tip seven, create a plan. And again, that timeline, set a timeline, you know, have a hard and fast timeline you're going to complete it by. Then just tip eight, just get on with it. Take action. Action is more powerful than just about anything else. Tip nine, reevaluate and assess your progress. And then tip 10, set goals for different parts and times of life. That's
I knew you'd nail it. And I didn't know you had all of those in the background. But the reason I asked you is we did a goal setting, a whole episode on goal setting a long time back. And you had so many cool tips. And there was something that you said that I carried forward in how I run and operate my own self-marketing of my business. And it was around keeping things simple. And, you know, just to have a target of a certain number of things that you do, you know, well and do regularly. And so I cut down all of this peripheral activity that I was doing here, there and everywhere because I get excited. And it was some of the best advice I could have adopted. So I can thank you after the event, but I knew you'd nail this one.
Well, yeah, sometimes I need to take my own advice and keep things simpler too.
We're so. All a work in progress, aren't we? Now, number four is select where and what to buy. And I know that all three of us could nail this because it's what we often do. And, you know, for me, where and what to buy comes down to more than just budget. It's all of the metrics. It's understanding what sort of property is suited to this person right now. Where does it fit in their portfolio? And it's all about their long-term goals. But, Pete, I'm going to throw this back to you to break down why selecting where and what to buy is a critical step in our top 10.
So for first-time buyers, it's really important because if you don't buy in the right location and the right type of property, then your first home is probably going to be your forever home. That first home won't grow in value greater than other homes and won't give you an opportunity to move up on the next rung of that property ladder. And for investors, if you want that property to grow in value significantly, you need to get your location right in particular. And so far as location is concerned, it's proximity to the CBD or proximity to a focus of amenities and also very close to the water. Now, we've seen during COVID how lifestyle locations have skyrocketed in price. The regional areas have outperformed the capital cities for the last 2 years. And I think we might be surprised that some regional areas have outperformed capital cities for a very long time. And I haven't done the analysis yet or the research, but I reckon a lot of those regional areas would be in lifestyle locations, you know, pretty close to a capital city, on the water or up in the hinterland. So it's really important you get your location right. What to buy, I'm a big fan of buying land, not just vacant land. I mean, I'm buying property on land. So in other words, buying houses rather than units. And if you can afford to, buy character or period style property. So if you can stick to those three things, get the right location, get a house instead of a unit, and the older, the better, so far as the house is concerned. Then if you're a first-time buyer, you've got a pretty good chance of moving up to a second, bigger and or better home. And if you're an investor, you've got a really good chance of buying that second and third and possibly more investment properties.
Wonderful advice. Now, Dave, I'm going to throw in one of your additional tips here because this certainly does tie in with thinking about how the first property will impact your longer term plans. And Pete touched on that. You know, do you want it to be a forever home, or do you want something that will outperform that you can springboard from? I'm going to bring in your comment now.
Yeah, so particularly for first time buyers, you know, your first property can set you up financially and create the equity needed to, you know, leapfrog into future homes or investments, or it can really hold you back. So really thinking about how this property will impact your longer term plans is critical. And, you know, so one of the first things to consider is, will it be an investment or lifestyle purchase? And getting clarity around that, connecting to your longer term plans. If you do think you have reasonable confidence of where you might live in the longer term, trying to buy in and around that location, so you're keeping pace with the capital growth of that location, because seen so many times over the last couple of decades, unfortunately, people start further out, you know, often in capital cities, and can't get into where they would ultimately like to live. So, you know, that's a big piece of that puzzle when it comes to thinking about how your first property will impact your longer term plans.
Yeah, and we've said it before, be really clear if you're buying a property that you know will serve you for a finite period of time and will then deliberately become an investment property versus the accidental investment. Mm. And to your fantastic point about thinking about where you ultimately want to live, sometimes, just sometimes, I have people that have an ultimate goal of living somewhere that will underperform other areas.
Yep.
So I might talk to them about planting their money in an area that will never appeal for them to live. But if I'm confident that their money will really work hard for them and give them a stronger nest egg, ultimately that might be a conversation too.
That's a great point, and I probably haven't ever really talked to that point, but that does arise, doesn't it, where it's really it's flipped around, it's the opposite.
Yeah. Sometimes I chat to people and you know that they've come from, let's say, a regional city, and I'm challenging the most recent performance across certainly our state when I say this, because regions have never outperformed the capital city long term. They've had bouts where they've done really well, but over the last 2 years, Melbourne's had that theory tipped on its head. But when I've worked with people that have ultimately wanted to live somewhere quite remote or in a regional town that hasn't been chugging along at the same pace as the capital city, they've been able to buy something maybe in a gentrifying, more rugged area that they wouldn't have been excited to live in. And Footscray is a case in point. I've seen some past clients make some serious gains by backing themselves and going into a period house in a place like Footscray. And I think that if you're thinking really strategically about where you ultimately want to be and where your money could work well for you now, it can definitely go well if you apply that strategy.
Just a quick reminder, you can access our show notes, including links to all of the resources we talk about, on our website, which is propertyplannerbuyerandprofessor.com.au.
Point number five, find your areas and do your research. Pete, can you shed some light on this one?
Yeah, look, I'm a bit old school. I'm a great believer in, if you're going to buy property, especially investment property, you should actually visit the area rather than just sit at home and do your research on the net. I mean, obviously homeowners will know the area because they're going to live there, so it's in their own vested interest to make sure that the area they want to live in is good. But I think investors should visit the area. That would mean driving around the area or riding a bike. I really like walking around the area because you get a much better feel for the area. You can hear what's happening in the neighbourhood, you know, what sort of music is on. You can smell the different smells in the area. And also talking to the locals, in particular business people, about, you know, what's happening in the area, what's planned to happen, as well as your research. If you're going to do research on the computer, the ABS is a great source of information. CoreLogic, SQM Research, even crime statistics. Like many states will have stats on crime in a particular, if not suburb, then postcode. Be careful, because sometimes a postcode can include two or more suburbs. But do your research, because the problem with buying and selling property, it is really expensive. And so if you make a mistake, it's a really expensive mistake. Do your research online and also in person.
Awesome tip, Pete. Now, this next one, Dave, has your name all over it. Find out how much you can borrow and if there is any assistance.
certainly understanding how much you can borrow is an important part of buying property for most people. I would preface that by saying what's most important is figuring out what your own budget is and understanding your existing surplus cash flow and how much cash flow you would like in place after you purchase, and then also your existing savings, but how much of a buffer you would like after you purchase, and using that to determine your price point. But then having done that and knowing what's affordable to you, then finding out which lenders, if any, will lend you what you need. Now, something to consider is I think often people actually compromise on their property strategy to go with a lender who has a lower interest rate. For most people, you know, if you ask them what's more important, the property you buy or the lender, they're going to say the property you buy. So if there's a mainstream lender who won't lend you what you think you can afford, make sure you ask the question of your strategic mortgage broker, have you looked into second tier lenders? Are there other lenders who might lend me more? Because if it's going to cost you, particularly for a home, getting into a home that's going to be suitable for you for the long term, or, you know, at least 10 years, whereas you might have to get out of it in 3 to 5 years because you haven't, or your strategic mortgage broker hasn't actually looked through the different lending options, you're selling yourself short and you might end up paying a big bill because you have to get out of that home sooner, or, you know, you don't buy the same level of quality of investment that you otherwise could have purchased.
Really good points. Spending a lot of dollars to save a few cents philosophy, it's always lost on me. And I see people arguing the toss about a slightly higher interest rate when they're actually getting a lender that not only will allow them to comfortably borrow more and it suits the plan that they had in terms of what they were willing to spend, but also the things that come with the loan, whether it's being able to access your bank or do a simple transfer easily, or most importantly, having the offset facility. I see a lot of people make that silly mistake of having a cheap interest rate and they rue the day. In terms of finding out if there's assistance, I think this is a critical difference between a good relationship-driven strategic mortgage broker and wandering into a bank, because it would be quite unusual to have, and I'm not saying it's impossible, but unusual for someone at the teller desk to start talking to you about what sort of incentives and initiatives are available to you and how you could make use of those. And in particular, the first home buyer deposit scheme, that has a number of places allocated and they're divided up between lenders, and a good mortgage broker will know all about where the opportunities are and what the wait lists are, and particularly what the criteria is for any applicant. So I think it's important to explore what's available if you're a first time buyer. Now, I've got one more here, which again is relating to budgeting, but I'm going to ask both of you. Save money for a deposit, consider shared equity and joint ownership. Pete, can I get you to comment on the consideration of shared equity and joint ownership? And Dave, I'll come back to you for savings.
This is not a political show, but I really like Albo's shared equity scheme that he's announced. I don't know if they're going to get voted in or not, but that is probably the...
Who's the, Albo, Pete?
That is probably the best homeowner assistance scheme I have heard or experienced in the last 40 years. The reason I like it is you only need a 2% deposit. It doesn't have to be your first home. We've never had that one before. And we're going back to it can be a new home or it can be an established home. Because one of the things I haven't liked about previous first homeowner assistance is it's only a new home, so it's forcing people out on the perimeter. Or they're buying really small stuff, in particular apartments, in the city or metropolitan area. Shared equity is not just a government, because the Victorian government has it, South Australian government has it, Western Australian government has it.
Yeah.
But banks used to have it. I'm not sure if they have. But the other way to help out buying a property, but if you can't afford to buy the whole lot, is joint ownership. So I've spoken a number of times about how my daughter number two and I bought a property together. That's one way that parents can help out their kids rather than, say, just a gift, an opportunity to buy something together. And if you are going to do that, I'd encourage you to go as tenants in common rather than joint tenants. If you don't know the difference, speak to a conveyancer or lawyer.
Great advice. I love this. Dave, let's chat about savings.
The earlier you set up an effective money management system, get your buckets sorted, and that interacts with your mortgage. So, and ideally through the use of offset accounts, the better. Now, a lot of first-time buyers we work with don't think it's that difficult to manage their money well. And that's because they're yet to have kids. A lot of them.
Boom.
A lot of them, aren't married yet. And obviously they don't have a mortgage or multiple mortgages yet. So the number of moving pieces are a lot simpler to all you first-time buyers out there. And it is, it is a bit simpler. But if you can get that system in place, and particularly, once you have a partner who's a long-term partner and can work together and have that working prior to kids, prior to your first mortgage and future mortgages, you're way ahead of so many people. So that would be my tip for first-time buyers.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Now, we've only got a little bit to go, but we are getting through all of our points here. Number 8 is crunch the numbers. And we've talked about savings and talked about borrowing capacity and lending requirements, but crunching the numbers on the property deal itself is really important, because we're talking about all kinds of things. And if it's an investment, you'll have rental and rental yields and outgoings to think about. But even if it's a first home for you, you need to have a look at what the outgoings are that are associated with that property, particularly if it's in a strata group, because you'll have shared expenses, which have all kinds of names across our states and territories, from strata costs to owner's corporation fees to body corporate. Pete, can I get you to weigh in on crunching the numbers?
Yeah, look, for first-time buyers, and please correct me if I'm wrong, Dave, but the bank or lenders are going to look at least the last 3 months of your spending and saving activity. So I've got a couple of young nephews who've been really, really good the last 3 months. Like, they've cancelled their gym membership, they've cancelled Netflix and Uber Eats and all of this stuff, so they can show the bank that they're good savers. Because the more favourable you look to the bank, the more chance you have of getting the loan. As Kate's already said, for an investment purposes, there are lots of numbers you have to think about. Income, rental income, tax depreciation benefits, consider that. And expenses, repairs, maintenance, council rates, property management fees, there's plenty of those. But it's really important that you crunch the numbers. As the bank's going to give you the majority of the money, you've got to look to the bank. So find out from a strategic mortgage broker what's going to make you look good in front of a lender.
Beautiful advice. Number 9 is getting professional advice. And this is something that we can all talk to. And I know that it's easy to come across on a show like this as pushing your own business, but I'm not going to do that. What I will say is the professional advice that I think is absolutely critical is first and foremost chatting to a strategic mortgage broker. And I also think you can never, ever go past having a good legal rep. And whether you're doing it yourself or shopping around for a great deal, do not sign a contract without a legal review. And legal reviews have all different shapes and sizes and costs associated with them. But be really confident that your legal rep is picking up on everything they need to pick up on for you. They're pointing out things that you might want to change in the contract or things that you really need to be aware of. Sometimes they're invisibles or things that you don't necessarily understand, and you might need to take that to your strategic mortgage broker and say, hey, I need you to understand the implication of my legal review is that there's a zoning issue here, or there's something that could impact my lending that I need you to explain to me. Dave, professional advice, obviously I'm not here to tout my own services. I think that there are some really critical steps that people need to take with their chosen professionals. Have you got anything that you'd add to that?
Look, I think seek independent advice, seek specialists, and work out what it is you want support and guidance around and where you need the most assistance, and seek out, the best people in those areas. I'm a big believer in getting specialist advice. I'm a big believer in being really good at what it is you do for a living and then getting advice in the areas you need help and being willing to pay for it.
Yeah. And my best warning is if it's free, you've really got to ask some questions.
Yeah.
Peter, I know that you, as you put your PIPA hat on and you've been the previous chairperson of PIPA, and you're very strong and firm on independent advice. What would you add to this one, Pete?
4 letters, QPIA, Qualified Property Investment Advisor. If you're an investor, find one of those, because as Dave said, they are independent. Right. Well, they certainly should be independent. If they're not, we can strip them of their QPIA rights. But, yeah, as you said, Kate, look, you're spending hundreds of thousands of dollars here on property. If you have to spend a few hundred dollars to speak to an accountant or to a lawyer, so be it.
Yeah.
You know, as I said before, making mistakes in property is expensive. Number one, it costs a lot of money. Number two, it costs a lot of money to buy and to sell. So you need to get it right.
Perfect. Now, point number 10, I love this one. It sounds simple, but it's not easy. Just do it.
Correct. A bit like the Nike logo.
Yeah.
In the end, you can talk the talk, but you have to walk the walk. You've got to do it.
Yeah.
Put it into place.
And the thing about just doing it, there's always lots of reasons why you could continue to procrastinate or perfect things. You can keep looking at aligning everything so that it's the perfect time. There's not really a perfect time, and there's definitely not a perfect property, but when you've got the right strategy in place and you've got a good firm set of criteria, must-haves and nice-to-haves, I think that's when you're good to go and it's time to just do it. Now, on that note, we've gone slightly over time, but I'm going to get you both to put on your thinking caps for your gold nuggets.
If you've enjoyed our podcast, leave a review on iTunes and share the episode with your friends.
Now it's time for us to go mining for our gold nugget property tip of the day.
Dave, your gold nugget.
So I remember when I was at a conference and there was this great speaker many eons ago, and he said action is more important than knowledge. It was really powerful for me when he said that. And I do think in many regards that's true. So taking action, if you invest over the course of your lifetime, consistently throughout your lifetime, you're going to ride ups and downs. But we know investment markets outperform inflation. So back to, you know, the just do it. You know, making decisions, it's actually, we learn through our mistakes or through others' mistakes. We learn much more through taking action than sitting on the sidelines. We don't learn anything when we're sitting on the sidelines and spectating. So take action and, you know, be in the game, invest throughout your lifetime, and you're going to be in a much stronger position than the vast majority of people, even though you're going to have some, you know, falls and stumbles along the way.
Excellent. Pete.
Well, mine is a little bit similar to Dave's. I could think of another one, but I think it's really important, so I'm going to say it again. Firstly, set your goals. Secondly, tell someone about your goals. And finally, just do it. Take the action. There are far too many people that suffer from analysis paralysis and think they are going to find the perfect property for the perfect price. Good luck with that. Set your goals, share your goals, and then just do it.
What a way to wrap up. This one has been a lot of fun. We've gone a little bit over, but we hope that all of our listeners have enjoyed the top 10 tips, and we look forward to market update with all of you next week.
See you next week.
See you later.
Bye for now. If you've enjoyed this episode and would like to learn more about some of the themes that we discussed in this particular episode, take a listen to the following episodes. Episode 30, Money Management, 7 Steps to Success. Episode 82, Goal Setting Fundamentals for Property Success. Episode 92, Property Planning and Your Next Purchase, Critical Considerations and Why Modelling Financial Outcomes is Vital to Success. Episode 95, Security Guarantees, Co-Borrowing, Gifts and More, Helping Your Kids Buy Their First Property. Episode 115, How Much Can I Borrow? How borrowing capacity can be impacted, massaged, and manipulated without breaking the rules, of course. Episode 116, how to increase your borrowing power, learn how investors, first home buyers, and upgraders increase capacity. And finally, episode 147, how the federal budget will impact the Australian property market, who it targets and benefits and why.
Thank you for joining the property planner, David Johnston, whose company Property Planning Australia provides the only independent pure planning advisory in Australia that does not buy or sell property, insurance, investment or super product.
And the property buyer, Kate Bacos, recently awarded Buyer's Agent of the Year and an owner of an independent buyer's agency in Melbourne's Inner West. And of course, the property professor, Peter Kalizos, Australia's leading property university lecturer Chairman of Property Investment Professionals of Australia and seasoned investor and developer.
We've really enjoyed delivering this podcast and we'd love you to join us on our podcast webpage at propertyplannerbuyerandprofessor.com.au or our Facebook page. Feel free to send us any questions and Dave, Pete and I will answer them for you.
So until next time, remember that each property decision you make is leading you towards your ideal lifestyle.
Everything we talk about in this episode is general in nature and should not be considered to be financial advice. We've put a lot of effort into making sure the information is accurate, but please don't rely on this information to make a decision. If you're looking for specific advice, please seek the help of a specialist and remember, it's important you determine your trusted advisors are independent.